The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Then again, a prime minister who openly admires the Chinese basic dictatorship, who tramples on fundamental rights by persecuting and criminalizing his own citizens as terrorists just because they dared to stand up to his perverted concept of democracy, should not be allowed to speak in this house at all. Mr. Trudeau, you are a disgrace for any democracy. Please spare us your presence.
When European leaders start calling out the Israelite leaders of today for their authoritarian measures, you know our nations are under attack. That right there is a German MEP that's she's commenting on the fact that Justin Trudeau would make an appearance in the EU Parliament. He gave his speech yesterday. I'll play a clip from Mr. Trudeau here in just a moment. But wow. Open rebuke. She wasn't the only one. We've got a lot to get to on today's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining our growing audience. Of course, you can get to the live audio stream of this show through CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3 on that platform. They also have some replays through the day, as well as Channel 6 on that same platform. To get to the live video stream of this show, you have to go to our very own website. We offer it exclusively at thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com/live. You can get to the live stream page, and it also has the videos posted after the fact in case you want to catch up on your TD viewing or watch on demand. That's thetrumpet.com. So here comes Justin Trudeau. He gives his very pious-sounding speech before the EU. Sounding like a wonderful democratic leader in the Western world, and yet sounding the alarm over the dangerous truckers, or those that would rise up as a populist movement because they're unhappy with their government. That's the grave danger that we're facing. So said Justin Trudeau in the EU Parliament yesterday in Brussels. Here's a bit from his speech, clip 8.
Unfortunately, we're seeing a rise in cynical populists who are trying to exploit these anxieties. They pretend to have easy solutions that play on people's fears. Even in Canada, where 90% of people are vaccinated, and our motto as a country is peace, order, and good government, we saw anti-vaccine and anti-government protests devolve into illegal occupations of our communities and blockades of our borders.
There's Trudeau still. He has no sympathy for the majority of Canadians that are unhappy with all of these dictatorial measures. He's the one that closed the borders. He's the one that said you can't travel here or there. He's the one that put in place all these restrictions. He's the one that imposed the lockdowns. Two MEPs denounced Trudeau. One of them, I'll play in just a moment, the Romanian MEP who basically, or maybe it was Croatia. There was a Romanian MEP that just wouldn't even attend the speech. And then another one from Croatia who basically turned and looked at Trudeau and said, you're a dictator. Now, if you've been reading thetrumpet.com in recent days, we had an article recently, the digital IDs and currency coming to Canada. More authoritarian measures. This is actually another one here from The Hill. It says the largest shakeup in finance since the formation of the Federal Reserve is nearly here. The establishment of a government-backed cryptocurrency is a threat to the freedom of commerce and world. And would give Washington the ability to weaponize banking against political dissent. Well, we saw Canada just get away with that a few weeks ago, freezing those bank accounts. The Hill says, think that this all sounds far-fetched. Just look at what's happening in China. Gives them some examples that, there. And then it says, closer to home, Canada used its emergency acts to effectively shut out supporters of the Freedom Convoy from polite society. And supporters of the protests had their bank accounts frozen. Single moms making minimum wage lost access to their money for donating as little as $50 to the truckers. Just a $50 donation to a freedom convoy. And the bank account was frozen. It says here the Canadian government shut down more than 200 bank accounts and more than 250 cryptocurrency addresses and threatened to suspend protesters' insurance coverage. Says the message from the government to the truckers and their supporters was clear. Your opinions are not acceptable to the Justin Trudeau government. That's from thehill.com. And so Trudeau, he's at the EU yesterday, waxing eloquent. And EU parliamentarians, they see right through it. They see the hypocrisy. They see what's happening in Canada and the United States. Listen to this next clip, or I guess you can watch it. It's actually in the Croatian language, but it has subtitles beneath. Listen, and you'll see right at the start, this MEP, he turns around, and behind him is Justin Trudeau. You can't see that in the shot. But he's looking right at Justin Trudeau while he's giving this speech. This is clip 11.
Canada, nekada symbol modernog svijeta je pod vodstvom vaše kvaziliberalne čizme proteklih mjeseci postala simbol kršenja temeljnih ljudskih prava i građanskih sloboda. Gledali smo kako konjima gaze žene, kako samohranim roditeljima blokirate bankovne račune da ne mogu platiti djeci školovanje, da ne mogu platiti lijekove, da ne mogu platiti račune za struju i vodu, da ne mogu platiti rate kredita za svoje domove. Za vas su to možda liberalne metode. Međutim, za mnoge građane svijeta, to je diktatura najgore vrste.
A dictatorship of the worst kind. You see, some of these European leaders who know a little something about living under a communist regime, they're calling out Justin Trudeau. He loves the Chinese Communist Party. He brags about it. And then he imposes his will on the Canadian people. And then he travels abroad and he talks about freedom and democracy. Well, Canada used to be a symbol of that. It used to be a symbol of liberty and freedom and democracy. Not so much anymore. I mean, how embarrassing to go before the EU and to get a complete and total smackdown. He's going to be heading back to Canada, one angry fellow, Justin Trudeau. But he deserves it. Look at what he got. It seems like it was about 10 years ago, doesn't it? The Freedom Convoy. What a year this has been, this calendar year of 2022. And think about, well, before I get to the final point on this segment here, or this section, go back to, this is back when the Freedom Convoy was in full swing. This is a Romanian MEP. Again, he was giving this speech in Brussels. I don't think Trudeau was in the audience. But listen to what he said about the Canadian MP. This is clip 9.
And with the Prime Minister of Canada, the way he's behaving right now, he's exactly like a tyrant, like a dictator. He's like Ceausescu in Romania. If even you doubt, if you raise doubts about the vaccines, you're outcasted. What's the difference between what he does and what happened under the Inquisition?
He's right. He's right. If even you doubt, well, your account can be frozen. No room for dissent. And we're seeing the Joe Bama people. They've looked at what's happened in Canada. They love it. They love them some the authoritarianism, the dictatorship policies. They love it. I mean, they've moved on from COVID, but they've just transferred it in other areas. COVID, by the way, we just passed in the United States 1 million deaths, 600,000 under Joe Biden's watch. The one who came in and said, I'm not going to shut down the economy. I'm going to shut down the virus. There's not so much talk about shutting down the virus anymore. 1 million COVID deaths, 60% of them under Joe Biden during the 14 or 15 months he's been in office. He hasn't even been in office that long. But they're looking at Canada. It's a trial run up there. But we'll let that go for a second. Just coming back to Europe, we've talked about the most significant development to come out from Russia's invasion of Ukraine. War in Europe. And what is the most significant development? The fact that Europe is seeing this American umbrella, this security umbrella, it's gone. It's over. And so they're going it alone. Germany's rebuilding its army, its military. The Europeans are coming together as one, like never before, for military union. They've had the political union. They've had the economic union. But now they've got the military. And as I told you yesterday, you've got Germany stepping to the front of the line saying, hey, we'll be the core of the European military. And everyone in Europe saying, hey, that's great. Take the lead, Germany. And then the Canadian PM comes to Europe. They say, get out of here. We don't even want you here. How are they going to receive Joe Biden? Joe Biden shows up today. He's the only world leader that won't take any questions. Why? It's all just it's all theater with Joe Obama. He's not even the real leader, and they're not even taking him seriously in Europe. Let's be honest. They know he's not serious. Ukraine knows he's not serious about actually helping Ukraine win. They're just interested. Joe Obama's people, they're just interested in prolonging the conflict because it suits their political aims. It provides them with enough cover. It gives them an excuse for all of the failed policies at home. Blame it on Putin. But what a divide we're seeing. A sharp divide between the United States and Europe. And this is prophesied. I've played you the sound bites from Herbert Armstrong. Sickness at home and a laughingstock abroad. One failure after another failure after another failure. Who can deny that America is under attack? Who can deny that Canada is under attack? Who can deny that Britain is under attack? I mean, it seems like old news now, but you go back to 2016, Brexit. That's another prophecy with respect to Herbert Armstrong and the fact that he was right. He told you that that Britain would not be part of this European Union, this seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. And for decades after he said that, skeptics could have said, what are you talking about? The UK's right in the midst of the European Union. Well, they were. They were through the 1980s and 90s and the 2000s. And then you come to 2016 and they're out. They're out of the European Union. And that too was prophesied. How much more is it going to take for people familiar with Herbert Armstrong's writings and teachings to wake up and to see what's happening? To see what's happening in our nations. Yesterday, I told you about this Supreme Court nominee confirmation hearing, Ketanji Brown Jackson, perhaps the most radical nominee ever considered for the Supreme Court of the United States. Here she is in an exchange yesterday. I forget the senator. We'll see in a moment. But notice how she responds to this question, clip 7.
No one suggests that a 20-week-old fetus can live independently outside the mother's womb. Do they?
I don't know.
I mean, the child will need to be fed or sheltered and all the other essentials to sustain human life. So there's no suggesting that after 20 weeks that a child can live independently, correct?
Senator, I'm not a biologist. I haven't studied this. I don't know.
So we definitely know she's not a biologist. This is her fallback response. If she can't answer something, she says, I'm not a biologist. Who will ever be able to forget what she said? What was it, Tuesday? We played it for you on yesterday's show. Here again, notice what she says with respect to another, even more obvious question. This is clip two.
Can you provide a definition for the word woman?
Can I provide a definition?
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah.
I can't.
You can't?
Not in this context. So I'm not a biologist.
She's not a biologist, so she can't tell if it's a woman or not. I can't, she says. I can't. I can't give you a definition of what a woman is. And so if that's the kind of thinking and reasoning of someone that's about to be confirmed for the highest court in the land, where does it stop? I mean, this is it's not even a slippery slope. We're down at the very bottom of the slope. We've already crash landed. Listen to Ted Cruz as he asked her or followed this line of questioning on yesterday or in the confirmation hearing yesterday, clip six.
I'm an Hispanic man. Could I decide I was an Asian man? Would I have the ability to be an Asian man and challenge Harvard's discrimination because I made that decision?
I mean, what is going on? This is a Senate confirmation hearing for a nominee to the Supreme Court of the United States. I'm a Hispanic man, but could I be an Asian man? What? I mean, Ted Cruz is a conservative, but he's just pointing out the absurdity of this. Where does it stop? At what point do we reach the end game? At what point do we finally say, okay, we've made it. It's as crazy as it's going to be. This booklet, I forget the exact year that it was written, Redefining Family. But in this booklet, it talks about that slippery slope. And you look at how fast things are changing for the worse. Just in the last few years, I thought Tucker Carlson last night made a brilliant point. Just in comparing the confirmation hearing with Justice Brown here, or Jackson, I guess it is, and the confirmation hearing for Brett Kavanaugh. Brett Kavanaugh was just 3.5 years ago. 3.5 years. Listen to, this is the senator from Hawaii, Mazie Hirono. This is what she said back in 2018 surrounding the Brett Kavanaugh hearings. This is clip 12.
I expect the men. I expect the men in this country and the men in this committee, and many of them, believe me, because we all signed on to this letter to demand an FBI investigation. But really, guess who's perpetuating all of these kinds of actions? It's the men in this country. And I just want to say to the men in this country, just shut up and step up. Do the right thing for a change.
So there's the senator from Hawaii calling out men. And she also said at the time that not only do women like Dr. Ford, she's the one that brought those charges against Kavanaugh, saying that he raped me and all those things. Not only do women like Dr. Ford, who bravely come forward, need to be heard, but they need to be believed. Every woman needs to be believed. So much of the controversy, if you can call it that, surrounding Brett Kavanaugh, really it was just lies, for all of these false accusations. So much of it revolved around men and women, right? And then also the fact that, hey, we're against sexual predation. He's a predator, Brett Kavanaugh. He's going after women, these poor victims. And now you fast forward just 3.5 years. We don't even know what a woman is. And oh, by the way, this woman that wants to be on the Supreme Court, she lets all of these sexual predators out of jail early. You've got what the feds put in place as the sentence, or they should be in jail for this number of years. The prosecutors say, we suggest it should be this number of years. And then you've got Justice Jackson who says, you know what, let's just let him have it. We'll let him out in 3 months. And of course, all of these Democrats, All of these radical communists. They say, yeah, this is the judge we want. She's brilliant. But the point I want to make to you, again, just to plug this booklet, Redefining Family, I mean, the definition is continually adjusted and redefined. The goalposts are continually moved. In 2018, it was very definitely men. Hirono's calling out the men. They're the problem. I mean, that was the height of the Me Too movement. Men were predators. Men were abusing women. Christine Blasey Ford comes forward. She should be believed no matter what. And then this nominee for the Supreme Court in 2022. Can you tell us, can you define what a woman is? No, I can't. I'm not a biologist. Not a biologist. Does it disturb you at all that all of these pedophiles or all of these criminals caught up in child pornography? Does it disturb you that Justice Jackson talked to them and even apologized to them as if they were the victims? Listen to Josh Hawley as he highlights some of the cases. He went through seven of them. I think I tack on just the last two before he makes his point. But this is a definite pattern in the history of Ketanji Brown Jackson's record. Clip five.
In United States versus Sears, the defendant distributed over 100 videos of child pornography. The guidelines recommended 97 to 121 months in prison. The prosecutor recommended 97 months in prison. Judge Jackson gave him 71 months. In United States versus Savage, the defendant was convicted of traveling across state lines to engage in sexual intercourse with a child and also possessed six separate thumb drives of child pornography. The guidelines recommended 46 to 57 months in prison. The prosecutor recommended 49 months in prison. Judge Jackson sentenced him to 37 months in prison. Now, those are seven cases that represent, as near as we can tell, all of Judge Jackson's cases dealing with child pornography from her time on the district court, in which she had some discretion to hand down a sentence.
She had the discretion to decide whether she'd go with what the Fed recommended, or what the federal government, that is, or what the prosecutors recommended. And in every case where she had the authority to decide, she went much lower. She was soft on pedophiles. She was soft on those distributing child pornography. Child pornography. This one case that Hawley mentioned, he went across state lines to have sexual intercourse with a child. And she, Justice Jackson, wanted it to be a slap on the wrist. I played the clip for you yesterday where she apologized to the pedophile. But these communists in government today, they want to move her right on through. But Brett Kavanaugh, if one woman, assuming we can even know if she's a woman or not, one woman comes forward saying that Brett Kavanaugh sexually abused her, and she should be believed because she's a woman. Brett Kavanaugh should be disqualified because he's Brett Kavanaugh, because he's a man. That book, again, Redefining Family, it takes you right through this. Well, let me just see what the date is. It's been around. It's been around for a number of years now. 2013 and 14. 2013, so written almost 10 years ago. But what that booklet says is that it's not going to get any better. It's just going to keep, like Paul said in 2 Timothy 3, it's just going to keep getting worse and worse and worse. Listen to some of the commentary in response to questioning like what you heard there from Josh Hawley. This is from MSNBC, clip four.
Because what Josh Hawley is doing, let's be very clear, what Josh Hawley is doing when he tries to do this is he's trying to get her killed. He is trying to get violence done against a Supreme Court nominee. And we know this because when these people go off making their ridiculous claims about child pornography, we know that some of their people show up violently to do stuff.
In case you didn't hear it there, he said what Holly is doing by asking her those questions or just pointing out some of the tidbits from her record, he's trying to kill her. He's trying to kill Justice Jackson. That was on cable news last night. The sickness, it goes right from the top of our heads all the way down to the toes. And listen, European leaders, as I said at the top of the segment, leaders the world over, they see the sickness. They see all of this internal strife and division. They know that this is their moment. They know. That's why they're on the move. That's why Iran's on the move, ready to get its own bomb. That's why Russia's on the move in Ukraine. That's why China's over there licking its chops, just waiting to make its move on Taiwan. That's why Germany is rebuilding its military. And we can go, like Justin Trudeau did, we can go to the EU Parliament and sound like we're a champion of democracy. But these leaders all over the world, they see right through it. They see what's happening in our own nations. And shamefully, we can't even see what we're doing to ourselves. All of this, of course, fits perfectly with the ebb and flow of prophetic events. And listen, it's accelerating. Like I said earlier this week, even our viewers have emailed in talking about how that, wow, as painful as it is to watch these months that we've been under the Joe Bama, the illegitimate Joe Bama administration, it certainly has cleared the way for a number of prophecies to accelerate ahead. And that is something we're definitely seeing. When we come back, we'll carry this point a little bit further and bring out some of the admonitions that Jesus gave to us about watching world events. And as I said earlier this week, bringing our prayer life into that watching or that observing of what's happening in our world. You're listening to Stephen Fleury. This is The Trumpet Daily. If you want to email the program, send feedback to td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Every particle of human suffering, unhappiness, misery, and death has come solely from the transgression of God's immutable law. Obedience to God's law liberates us from all unhappiness, pain, and suffering. It frees us from captivity, from spiritual slavery. Obeying God's commandments guarantees a life overflowing with joyful abundance. For much more on this subject, request a free copy of The Ten Commandments. When you make your request, don't forget to enroll in the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. This 36-lesson course is a distance learning program that will help you to get to know your Bible. Each month, you will receive a lesson that guides you in discovering the answers to life's most important questions, all from your own Bible. Your enrollment has already been paid for. Enroll today. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
Before we proceed, just to give you a little bit of breaking news from one of our sister websites. This is at the Armstrong Institute.org. Just check that out later on today, if you would. There's an article there. Ancient Hebrew curse tablet discovered at Joshua's altar on Mount Ebal. The article's by one of our Jerusalem correspondents, Christopher Eames. They've been tracking this story closely. There's an article in the latest issue of Let the Stones Speak that talks about some of the discoveries there at this altar, Joshua's altar at Mount Ebal. And just to give you a few excerpts from Christopher's piece, he says here in a press release today, archaeologist Dr. Scott Stripling and his team of archaeologists and epigraphers announced the stunning discovery of a lead curse tablet following the wet sifting of excavation fills at the site of Joshua's altar on Mount Ebal. It's up around Shiloh and Shechem, I think, is the Israeli city today. Nablus is the Palestinian city. So a little ways north of Jerusalem, maybe 30 or 40 minutes north. In any event, it says here, the cursed tablet, unearthed in 2019, contains an ancient Hebrew inscription consisting of 40 letters, which is centuries older than any known Hebrew inscription from ancient Israel, according to the press release. It says, in a joint effort between four scientists from the Academy of Sciences of the Czech Republic and two esteemed epigraphers, hopefully I'm pronouncing that right, it says here, the proto-alphabetic inscription was deciphered and read the following. Cursed, cursed, cursed. This is from the inscription. Cursed by the God, it says, you will die cursed. Cursed you will surely die. Cursed by Yahweh. Cursed, cursed, cursed. So if you go back to, and this is at the top of the article by Chris, this is Deuteronomy 11 and verse 29. It says, and it shall come to pass when the eternal your God shall bring you into the land where you go to possess it, that you shall set the blessing upon Mount Gerizim and the curse upon Mount Ebal. So these two mountains, anciently, Mount Gerizim, the blessings, the one that represented the blessings, and then Mount Ebal represented the curses. This is right out of Deuteronomy 30. If you obey my commandments, then you're going to be blessed. If you disobey, then you're going to be cursed. It says here, then Joshua built an altar unto the Eternal, the God of Israel, on Mount Ebal, as Moses, the servant of the Eternal, commanded. Again, that's from Deuteronomy 11. You can also read more about it in Joshua 8. But here is this archaeologist, Scott Stripling, and he's found these inscriptions that it aligns perfectly with the history that's recorded in your, and I mean, this goes back not just to not the Second Temple period when the Jews came back to rebuild Jerusalem, not to 1000 BC, the days of Solomon and David before him. This goes all the way back to Joshua, who followed in the steps of Moses. Joshua, who brought the Israelites into the land of Canaan. Says here, the tablet remarkably parallels the account in Deuteronomy 11, 27 and Joshua 8, which record the establishment of an altar on the site at the time of the Israelite conquest of Canaan and the declaration of curses from it. It says, as explained in our last issue of Let the Stone Speak, there are two stone altars at the site, a large early Iron Age I altar, which was built over a smaller original late Bronze Age altar, both excavated by the late Haifa University archaeologist Adam Zertal. So again, I won't take the time to read through the entirety of the piece, but go to armstronginstitute.org and look for the tab that says articles, and it'll take you right to this breaking news piece that we only just posted about a half hour ago. Breaking news coming right out from Jerusalem, or near Jerusalem, just north of Jerusalem. Now, coming back to the pace, as I said at the end of the first segment, the pace of prophetic events. Jesus said to us, watch you therefore and pray always. I've been talking this week about how that these fulfilled prophecies, and we're seeing quite a few of them, should serve as quite the motivation for us to get fired up for God, to really bring some energy and some life into our prayers. You could look at what's happening here in the United States, and it does make you sigh and cry, as the prophet Ezekiel said, because the affliction, it's so bitter, and there's no help, just like 2 Kings 14 says. Yet at the same time, from a prophetic standpoint, these communists, they come in, they steal the election in November 2020, and I mean, look at what they have done. Look at what they have opened up in Europe, elsewhere, all around the world. I mean, not that we're just cheering on these places of conflict, but it does align with what Jesus said in Matthew 24. I mean, these are some of the events to unfold just before the return of Christ to this earth. Now, we know there's some other prophecies that speak of Donald Trump coming back into office. I thought this piece by Roger Kimball at the American Greatness website was pretty interesting in light of some of the things we've said on this program over the past many months. It's talking here about the New York Times revelation last week that the Hunter Biden laptop is legit. They've authenticated it. And I mean, as that begins to come out, and there's some indication that we're going to get not even just what has been revealed by the New York Post or by Miranda Devine. She came out with the book on the Hunter laptop recently. But there's certain voices out there saying that even more damning evidence is coming out about these traitors that are currently in control of America's government. But it says here, Kimball does, as to why this story, as to why the New York Times would finally admit it 17 months after they've covered this up. By the way, let me just backtrack a minute. This is the New York Times issuing its guidance on misinformation. This was just this morning. False claims regularly flow from the leaders of the Republican Party, including its most recent president. Yep, Donald Trump. Lie, lie, lie. You know, the Washington Post, the Pinocchios, the thousands of lies, supposedly, that Donald Trump was telling for 4 years. And here's the New York Times come waltzing into the room. Yeah, the Republicans tell lies. This is a week after they revealed that we covered up the Hunter Biden laptop story. We told you it was Russia misinformation. And then they admit quietly, paragraph 24, that, oh yeah, we've authenticated it. It actually is Hunter's laptop. But the Times today, without any self-awareness whatsoever, it says, false claims regularly flow from the leaders of the Republican Party. Further on, they write, there is no comparable list of false information coming from senior members of the Democrat Party. No, no, no. They just distribute the truth, you see. Look at the contrast between Kavanaugh and Jackson. Look at the Hunter Biden laptop story. Look at these people know. And yet, it's as if they don't even read their own paper. It's like Candace Owens the other day. She said something about Ukraine and all the corruption there, and the New York Times called her out on this. How could you side with Putin? How dare you say there's corruption in Ukraine? And Candace Owens just referred back to all of these links from the New York Times. You're the ones that said that there's corruption in Ukraine, and you didn't even say it but 2 seconds ago. These people, what is going on? Coming back to Kimball's story there, he speculates, why is this coming out now? Why is the New York Times finally fessing up? I wonder if there isn't something else going on, he writes. The news is full, not only of stories about the New York Times fessing up, sort of, about the contents of Hunter's laptop, but also of stories about how Hunter is likely to be indicted for a tax fraud. In one sense, this is not news. I wrote about it at the end of 2020 when Hunter announced that he was being investigated. But in another sense, I suspect that news like the revelation from the New York Times that, what do you know, all that stuff about Hunter's laptop was on the level, like Joe Biden's bizarre, well, further on he writes, the issue is never the issue. I suspect that Joe Biden is being prepped for ejection. Exactly how it will happen, I do not yet know. But he is on the threshold, or possibly has even passed the threshold. It's Roger Kimball, a well-known journalist. He's a conservative. It's at American Greatness. Just the fact, as I was telling the students this morning, just the fact that this kind of an article would appear 14, 15 months into this illegitimate administration with all of these plummeting poll numbers for the Biden administration. Here again. So it's taken longer than some of us thought it might. But look, people see that the handwriting is on the wall. Is this the New York Times way of saying to the radical left, the communist left, listen, we can dispense with Joe Biden. He has served his purpose. It's time to move on. Even the leaders of Europe and elsewhere, they see what a fraud he is. They see right through the hypocrisy, just like with Justin Trudeau. These events, these prophetic events, they're not slowing down. because the election was stolen from Donald Trump. They're speeding up. It's at a lightning pace at the moment. And as I say, it ought to serve as motivation for all of us to step it up spiritually. What will it take for so many of those Laodicean Christians that just went right to sleep after Herbert Armstrong died and thought that, oh, well, my Lord delays his coming. It's not going to happen, so I might as well ease up on the gas pedal. I might as well slow things down spiritually. I might as well enjoy life. I might as well get caught up into materialism and things. Riches, rich and increased with goods, God says about the Laodiceans. Notice what it says here in 2 Timothy 3. I read this to you previously, a few days ago. But Paul writes, "This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come." Dangerous, perilous times are coming in the last days. And if you're watching, like Jesus said to, if you're watching and observing the events of this world, you know we're in the midst of dangerous and perilous times. And yet, read on. Listen to what Paul says. In these dangerous, perilous times, he says in verse 2, men shall be lovers of their own selves. Well, what about the danger? What about the perilous events? Men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy. Verse 4 says, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures. Lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. You mean in the midst of these dangerous days, we have people that are totally blind to what's going on all around them, and they're just addicted to pleasure. They're lovers of themselves. Verse 5 says, having a form of godliness. I mean, it sounds right. Justin Trudeau, he goes in with the soft-spoken voice, and I mean, he sounds righteous. It all has a form of godliness, but denies the power thereof. From such, turn away. God says, look, just disconnect. I've talked about that some this week. Disconnect from these influences. Turn away from them. Just shun them. And focus on, okay, we need to watch world events for sure. Jesus gave us that command. But it said, pray always that you might be accounted worthy to escape. Elsewhere, Christ said, well, I think it was in that same passage in Luke 21. It said, don't get caught up in drunkenness and surfeiting and all the cares of this world. That's the last thing you want to do at this moment, at this time when it's so dangerous and perilous. And yet that's what so many people are doing. They're just escaping to the world of their smartphone or their gadget or their Netflix account or their music, movies. We need to make time for deep work, as I said yesterday, deep thought. There's, as I told the students this morning, there is no more important deep work than our contact with God every day. A long, sustained session of uninterrupted conversation with God our Father, our Maker in heaven. Prayers to God, the effectual, fervent prayers of a righteous man avail much. And then I mentioned the example of the Bereans and how that they studied on yesterday's show. Mr. Armstrong, he wrote this coworker letter back in 1955. And this was right at the time when television was the new thing. Television, of all things. And at that time in God's work, Mr. Armstrong was sending out pairs of ministers to travel the United States to go on these baptizing tours. They'd meet up with coworkers that showed interest in the Worldwide Church of God, and they'd request a visit from a minister. And so this team of ministers would come in and counsel them along and baptize them, and congregations would develop all over the country. But Mr. Armstrong was shocked at some of the reports he was getting back from these field ministers who said that initially, yeah, the enthusiasm, the excitement was there from these new contacts, but then it wasn't long before that interest began to wane. They were really excited about the emergence of television and not as excited about the literature that the Worldwide Church of God was distributing or the message that Herbert Armstrong was proclaiming over the airwaves on radio. And later it would be on TV, as it happens. But Mr. Armstrong writes to coworkers and he says, "Do you realize what this means?" He says, "Coworkers and former coworkers are saying, without realizing it, 'Yes, I sure did like to listen to God's truth, but I just don't have time for Christ or his gospel anymore. I've put worldly entertainment programs first in my life now. I serve and devote myself to the pleasing entertainment of the world now. I'm neglecting Christ's so great salvation and eternal life now. I'm letting myself enjoy a few hours of worldly entertainment that the tobacco, liquor, and cosmetic people send into my home." Yeah, it's a strong pull, the television. That was 1955 that Mr. Armstrong wrote this. What would he say today? There's just a few people supporting this end of the end time work. A few faithful members, a few thousand more supporting the work as co-workers, donors. But how many people have just buried their heads in the sand? How many people are just too busy with other things? Lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. A lot of people fall into that category. I mean, we've got to be honest with ourselves. What is more important to us? God or this world and the ways of this world? It's something to think about. Ezekiel 11, notice this, verse 1, it says, "Moreover, the Spirit lifted me up and brought me unto the east gate of the Lord's house, which looks eastward. And behold, at the door of the gate, 25 men, among whom I saw Jezaniah the son of Azar, and Pelatiah the son of Benaiah, princes of the people." So here are leading men who lead, priests, leaders, teachers, turning their backs on God and pressuring others to do the same thing. Verse 2 says, "Then said he unto me, Son of man, these are the men that devise mischief and give wicked counsel in this city, which say, 'It is not near. Let us build houses. This city is the cauldron, and we be the flesh.' It is not near." Jesus, if you look at Matthew 24, says it's the evil servant in his heart who says, "My Lord delays his coming." What a time to, even if it's not stated, but to say or to believe in your heart that, well, it's not really time. We've got more time to get on track spiritually. It's not near. It's not really at the door. My father says in Malachi's message, these are carnal-minded people with their minds naturally on physical things. They're spiritually blind. He's talking about the Laodiceans there. I'll leave it to you to look at Amos 6, verses 1 through 3, where it talks about putting far away the evil day. But here in Ezekiel, it says in verse 3, "It is not near." That's what these people say. Notice verse 21 of chapter 12. We're still in the book of Ezekiel, Ezekiel 12. Verse 21, it says, "And the word of the Eternal came to me, saying, Son of man, what is that proverb that you have in the land of Israel, saying, 'The days are prolonged and every vision fails.'" Every vision fails. I mean, it's just going on a little bit longer than we thought. How long? How long are we going to be under the authoritarian rule of this illegitimate administration? It's certainly easy to pray a prayer like that. the affliction is so bitter. And yet we do need to step back and look at the bigger picture from time to time. Prophecy is accelerating like never before. It says in verse 23, "Tell them, therefore, thus says the eternal God, I will make this proverb or this prophecy to cease, and they shall no more use it as a prophecy in Israel, but say unto them, the days are at hand, and the effect of every nation." The days are at hand. The days are upon us. There's no time to waste. There is no more delay. And so we've got to guard against what Paul prophesied there in 2 Timothy 3, that even in the midst of these dangerous days, these perilous times, we somehow get caught up in just loving self and loving pleasure instead of loving God. At the very time people should be aroused from sleep, spiritually speaking, this is what's happened to so many of God's people. Tens of thousands of them, fast asleep spiritually, wretched, poor, blind, naked, as it says in Revelation 3, putting their faith, their trust in physical riches, rich and increased with goods. And God's response, you can read it if you read the end of Revelation 3, he says, I counsel you to... to make sure that you learn the lesson. I mean, the tribulation is coming. The trial of fire is coming. That's God pleading with his people. Notice Romans 13. It says in verse 11, "And that knowing the time that now is that knowing the time that now it is high time to awake out of sleep, for now is our salvation nearer than what we believed." What did the prophet Ezekiel say? He said, the days are now at hand. Paul said, now it's time to wake up, for our salvation is nearer than we believed. What would have happened in Paul's day if a convert would have said, well, you know, Paul, I don't know. Actually, I think there's 2,000 years left. I think I'm just going to kind of slow it down. I think I might just throw in the towel for a while. I can always get back in shape spiritually a little bit later. He said it's high time, and he was talking to people in his day too. Of course, this inspired word is primarily for us in these last days. But God wanted the people in Paul's day to remain faithful right up until their physical death. It doesn't matter when Christ returns specifically, but when he does, will you be ready? Will you be found doing, as Jesus said? Will you be zealous and earnest for good works? Or will you be a lover of pleasure more than a lover of God? Verse 12 says, "The night is far spent. The day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the armor of light." Cast off those works of darkness. Moffat says, the day is almost here. We're running out of time. There's just a few moments left. Verse 14 says, "But put you on the Lord Jesus Christ, and make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof." Put on Christ every day. Disconnect from the devil and the things of this world. Turn away, as Paul said in 2 Timothy 3. Turn away or disconnect from Satan's broadcast, from Satan and his worldly ways. Disconnect from that and plug in to Jesus Christ. Plug in to the mind of Christ, Philippians 2:5. Put, to use the language here in verse 14, put on the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, more than ever, is the time to bring urgency and zeal into our Christian living. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback to the show, you can email the program, td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you next time.